It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger is here, and the great winemaker Greg Graziano. Greg, good to see you again. It's been a long time, man.
Good to see you as well. Thank you very much.
So, first off, let's do the history of your family and the wines and everything, because it's a pretty iconic stuff, and you guys have been around for a while, so give us the history, Brenda.
Well, let's see, my grandfather worked his way across the United States. He landed in Ellis Island about 1907, ended up in Mendocino 1918, instantly bought 100 acres with his future brother-in-law. And started planting grapes like 2 years before Prohibition, right? So, they stayed alive, obviously, by selling grapes back east. And then when Prohibition ended, of course, they started selling grapes to, you know, I mean, during Prohibition, of course, they made, you know, grappa, and they sold wine, and they did whatever they could to survive.
They do prunes?
No, it was
thank
basically,
God.
Yeah, thank God. Mendocino wasn't much into prunes like yeah. Sonoma. We were a little smarter than that, I guess, at that time. But so then they started to sell grapes to, you know, Gallo and Italian Swiss Colony. And then, you know, we started always selling grapes. We sold grapes to Sebastiani and Parducci and so on and so forth. So we did that for many years. And, of course, then my family started Cresta Blanca Winery, or it was called Mendocino Vineyards, actually. It was a co-op in early 50s. And they sold most of the bulk wine. Gallo bought, and Italian Swiss Colony bought most of it at that time. And then so years after that, Cresta Blanca, a company in the Central Valley, it was called Guild Wineries and Distilleries, purchased it, changed the name to Cresta Blanca, which was an old winery in the Livermore Valley, right? One of the early wineries of the Livermore Valley.
Wow.
So they did that for a while. That worked out really well. And, of course, then things changed. And then, of course, Constellation came in and bought the winery and changed the name to Dunwood, and that was a dead thing, never happened. So,
Dunwood?
Dunwood, right.
Yeah.
So I started making wine in 1977. I started with a friend of mine, Jim Maloney. We started Milano Winery, and I did that till about 1982, and then started on my own and did a bunch of, you know, consulting, and then in 85 went to work for La Crema for a friend of mine who was the winemaker, and then I took over in 86 and worked there till 90.
Love La Crema.
Yeah, those were great wines back then. They're still good wines, but they're not the same as what we used to make, you know, because we made like maybe 50,000 cases when we were huge, and now like they probably make 2 million cases.
Yeah, right.
So that was an experimental operation in those days.
Yeah, it was. It was.
Who bought La Crema? Gallo?
Jackson family.
Oh, Jackson, of course.
Yeah. It was originally called La Crema Viñera.
Right. Rod Berglund started it, and Rod now is the owner winemaker of Joseph Swan. So,
and making some really exciting wines over there.
Yeah, he
there
does
too.
A good job. He's one of the old-time guys like me, you know. He makes wine the old way, right? And he does a good job, and yeah, his wines are very good.
Your grandfather, Vincenzo Graziano. Now,
yes.
That is a cool name. Mike, look into changing the name of the show to The Drive with Vincenzo Vaccario. My grandfather was Vincenzo Vaccario.
Oh, is that right?
I'm Italian, too. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, Vincent was wasn't he one of the saints of wine, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's an important wine name.
And
for
my
sure.
name was supposed to be Vincenzo.
Oh.
But my mother's brother died in World War II. He was Stephen, so they changed it to that. But I have a cousin Vinny.
Okay. Believe it or not, I saw that movie. I think it was last night. It was on.
Yeah, I watched it last week. Every time it's on, if I'm flipping around and it's on, I just go there.
That sequence on the stand with her on the stand,
oh,
just
unbelievable.
Brilliant.
It's how she won the Academy Award.
For sure.
Well, anyway, so we have four brands. You know, this thing has morphed into kind of craziness. And you know, we make like 30-plus different grape varieties. So So I always tell people when they get into this business, don't do what I do, because it doesn't make sense. I mean, it works for us, but man, it's a hard thing to maintain.
Did you go to UC Davis, Fresno?
I did, but I never graduated. I left early to start Milano Winery in 77. Okay. I was never a very good student anyway, you know, because I hated chemistry and all that other stuff. You can't stand that stuff.
But becoming a winemaker, you need to know a lot of that stuff.
No, you don't need to know that stuff. You just need to know the science, and you need to know
how the stuff
affects the taste. Yes, it's like being a winemaker is kind of like being a chef. You know, some of the greatest chefs in the world never went to cooking school.
Yeah, right.
They were just lucky enough to go to work for some of the great chefs, and that's what I did. I worked for some really good winemakers, and, you know, when you do something for 43 years, you're bound to learn something.
Yeah, well, I've been doing radio 48 years, and I haven't learned a damn thing, but that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, right.
Dan, talk about Graziano's.
Well, Greg's been in the business so long that he just sort of knows everything by the back of his hand. And the fun thing for me in particular is that he's using grape varieties that I just read about. And the only way to ever taste them is to buy Greg's wines. And they're really exciting. They're fascinating. And they're alternative to the traditional wines. You know, Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, Sauvignon Blanc, all this stuff. Everybody's making everything like that. And he's got Fiano, and he's got, you know, Trebbiano, and grape varieties from Italy, and he's got grape varieties from all over. And it's really exciting. I just love that.
Greg, talk about this one.
This is our...
It looks like a Chardonnay, but it's
yeah, this,
so
this
much
is our
more.
2019 Montevolpe, which is Fox Mountain in Italian. This is our Vesuvius, and it's from our vineyard in Potter Valley, which is a great region to grow great white grapes and also Pinot Noir.
And this is a major blend of a lot of stuff that we've never heard of.
Yeah, Vesuvius, of course, is the mountain in Campania, Italy. Mm-hmm. And it's made from the varieties that grow around that mountain. Cota di Volpi, which is the foxtail, Fiano, Greco di Tufo, and then Falanghina. So we have all these varieties planted in our Potter Valley vineyard. And I figured I've made wine from each one of them. And they're small amounts, so I just said, let's kind of put them together and see what happens, right?
For people who don't know about Potter Valley, it's adjacent to Redwood Valley, but it's higher in altitude by a good, quarter mile maybe? A few hundred yards anyway.
Yeah.
And the interesting part there is that all it does is gives you cooler weather. So you get better acidity, and that's why you have to grow some white wine grapes in there.
Correct, and we have probably more frost there than Champagne, so it's not an easy place to grow grapes, right? It's difficult.
Well, what's the years? I've never tasted something like this, really. Dan?
Well, he's got an aromatic grape variety in here, and then he's got a grape variety that's focused on acidity. He's got another grape variety that's focused on tropical fruit. All of those pieces are coming together in one smell that you would never identify this by itself, because there's so much going on in here.
Yeah,
it's very complex. It was spent some time in the barrel, so it does have that richness of Chardonnay, but it's not oaky in any way. So what you get is the effect of the oak without the flavor.
Well, they're neutral French Burgundy barrels, so we don't really want any oak. We just want the fermentation in barrels because we want the lees contact. We stir the lees, you know, once a month before we top, and we just kind of want that fermentation that goes on in there, right?
And the fruit is barking at me in this. It's wonderful, and it's creamy on the mid palate.
Absolutely,
and the finish stays with you, and it's lovely.
It's gorgeous. And
thank you.
And a wine like this, if it were any other producer, it'd be $30. What's your price, Greg?
I think it's like 18, you know.
No kidding.
And now I'm really excited because all of our whites and our rosés and some of our, you know, less serious red wines are all under screw cap now. So, and I'm really liking it. You know, people say, well, I really love it. It's fun. It's easy. And one of the reasons why we did it, and unfortunately we did it at the worst time you could do it, we did this mainly for restaurants because I got tired of going into restaurants and people going, oh, I'd buy this wine if it had a screw cap. And I go, what's the big deal? Well, I can't get people that can use a corkscrew, believe it or not, that work in my restaurant.
Well, you're looking at one of them. I don't work in your restaurant, but I like the screw top thing big time.
Right, and of course now, you know, we there's hardly any restaurant. We're hardly selling any wine at all to restaurants.
Right.
When we had all these wines show up in Screwcast. But we got this coming year, and I think things are going to change and going to be good again, and we're excited.
You're available at Bottle Barn, I'm sure.
Some things, yes. Okay. Yes.
GrazianoFamilyOfWines.com. GrazianoFamilyOfWines.com.
And the reason for family is that there's more than one brand.
Exactly. Some people say, well, why don't you just call it Graziano Family Wines? Well, this is a family of wines. It's every brand is different and, you know.
And how many brands?
Four. And actually, we have a new one that's in the works, but, you know, it's a lot to manage. And there's a reason. There's a method to the madness, such as Montevolpe is all Italian grape varieties, right?
Right.
So I guess we're ready. What are the next? Next thing, we're going to try this.
Yeah, go ahead.
The thing that you brought?
Oh, yeah.
It's time to check into Dan's cellar.
I did something interesting. I put a bottle of this 2014 J. Lohr Cuvée POM, or they call it POM, in the cellar. This is from Paso Robles, but it's from J. Lohr Vineyards. The wine is essentially a Merlot-based Bordeaux-style wine, and it's a 14. They released it 4 years ago. It was in pretty good shape in those days. It was very fresh and young. It still got that same youthfulness. The interesting part of it is that the wine is still yet to develop all of its characteristics. It's just a baby, but much better than it was at the beginning. At the beginning, it was just like a tank sample. Now you got a flavor profile from a little bit of barrel aging.
2014.
Well, the wine's got beautiful color. It's a very concentrated color.
And look, it's a slightly warmer climate Merlot, but they did a good job of keeping the acid up, so it's in good shape.
I like it a lot. And as you know, I'm a big Merlot fan.
Yeah.
We don't see enough Merlot these days.
We just don't.
That's pretty good.
No, that's too bad.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, the aging has done it well.
What do you think, man?
Like I said, I think it's pretty good. I'm not a big Paso fan. Because sometimes I think the wines are a little overdone, too high in alcohol, sometimes too low in acidity, but this is pretty nice.
They did a nice job with it.
Yeah, they did.
I was pleased that we put the one bottle away, and that's it.
And who is it again?
J. Lohr.
Nice.
I love J. Lohr.
They do a good job with a lot of wines.
I had a J. Lohr Chardonnay the other night.
That's the delicious wine.
Oh.
They did a beautiful job of that.
I think it was a 17.
Yeah, exactly what it was. Exactly.
Amazing.
Yeah, good stuff. Now, do you have another red over there?
We do. We have from our St. Gregory brand, which is all Pinots, and this is our Pinot Meunier.
Oh. Now, this is interesting. Pinot Meunier is actually more heavily planted in Champagne than Pinot Noir is.
Correct.
The grape variety Pinot Meunier is this is essentially a white wine with color.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I love the story about Meunier, and it gets its name from the fact that it's really difficult to tell the difference in the grapes, but all you have to do is look at the growing tips of the vine, and you look at underneath of the leaf, and they're kind of covered in white hair. So it looks like somebody dusted the leaf
like
with flour.
Dan.
Right.
Thank you.
So
Steve.
Meunier in French is the miller, right, one who mills the wheat into flour, so that's why it got its name. It's kind of a softer Pinot. Sometimes a little more jammy. This comes from, our property in Potter Valley and from another small vineyard in Redwood Valley. It's been in barrels for over 2 years, all French Burgundy, again.
It really is a
it's kind of cold right now.
Aromatically,
cellar,
very aromatically spicy and floral, surprisingly enough, for a red wine to be floral, but it's got beautiful character, and you wouldn't mistake it for a Pinot Noir.
Now, the tannins are a bit softer, but yeah, you're right. It's very floral. We're probably one of the oldest producers of this variety in the state.
Really?
Chandon used to be the biggest and oldest, and they no longer produce it. And I think they're the ones that got me excited in it, them and Milla Handley, the late Milla Handley.
Mm-hmm.
And she quit making it because she lost her vineyard source. So I got people to plant it for me, and now I plant my own, and I think it's a wonderful variety. And again, I'm sorry that the wines are so cold, Dan. It's just, like I said, came out of our cellar, and it's the winery's so cold this winter.
It works for me.
Yeah, delicious wine. And unfortunately, a grape variety that when you see Pinot Meunier on the shelf, most people would say, what's that? And they walk right past it.
Right. We also make sparkling wine out of it. So it makes wonderful sparkling wine, as you know, as they do in Champagne as well. No, it's a very wonderful variety, and we're always excited about it.
Go to GrazianoFamilyOfWines.com. Where are you guys located?
Well, the winery's in Redwood Valley.
Right.
And we have a tasting room in the town of Hopland.
Okay.
So that's where everybody should go, is to the tasting room, and you can taste everything there. We don't charge for tasting. So, you know, we have a big following. We have a good wine club, because people really appreciate the fact that our prices are fair and we don't charge.
How are you guys dealing with the pandemic? I mean,
well, you know, we're still open. Unlike, I think, Sonoma County, I think they closed down a lot of restaurants.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're in.
But we
Mendocino.
Have to do it out. We have to do it outdoors. So we have some chairs outdoor, maybe an umbrella, and you know, that's kind of how we have to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dan,
this is an exciting vineyard. Property because there's so many different varieties planted in there. And what I like about what Greg does is that he keeps them separate, and he's got some unique property, designations for the wines. So when you try them, they are different. There's no sameness in any of these wines. They're all different.
Right.
And to me, that's the most amazing part of it is that, and you've got that one red blend over there, which I'm dying to try, the 15, which is, and for a red blend to come out that's already full five years old, that's what a benefit to the consumer.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Well, this Pinot Meunier is 2017. So, again, because it's grown where it is, because of our winemaking style, it's been in barrels for over 2 years.
Wow.
And, you know, some new French wood, and it's got great acidity. So these wines age really, really well. We're not afraid of vintages. Our wines do very, very well with time.
Well, you're looking at the man I call Dan Lay It Down Burger, so when it comes to time, he's all over it.
My favorite thing. So what about that 15? Is that ready to...
Well, I'd like to maybe... I've got another one, another one of your favorites, Dan. You really like Barbera.
I love Barbera.
And I think one of the things that I like that you like about Barbera is we in America have a tendency to overdo everything, right? Everybody wants everything to look like ink, and everything wants, they want it 15% alcohol, and they want the pH to be 4, which is non-existent. But so I make wines kind of in the old world Dan kind of style. So this is our 2016 Barbera, and it comes from some vineyards all around Mendocino, and it's been in barrels again for like 3 years, so nobody does. They don't even do that in Piemonte, right? I mean, Barbera doesn't get a lot of wood, so I really love.
This is beautiful.
I my stomach has a problem now with red wines.
With red wines, sure.
Let me have another taste of that.
That Vesuvius?
Yeah, Vesuvius. Man, that was good.
This Barbera is really a wonderful example of a wine that when you put your nose in the glass, your first impression is you want to go cook up some pasta or some pizza. This is really you smell this, you say, wait a minute, this is automatic food comparison.
Well,
right?
Well, this is of course, because it's from Piemonte, the variety, this is under our Enotria brand, which is what the Greeks called Italy, of course, and Enotria means land of wine. So again, this is not super acidic like a lot of Barberas, not because we do anything to the wine. It's just because we get the grapes relatively ripe, so the acidity comes down a bit. But it's still got nice acidity.
It's got great acidity. And in comparison to a lot of California Barberas that have intentionally made oak as its primary flavor profile, here's a wine that was obviously spent some time in barrels, but the oak is so far into the background that all you're getting is this primary fruit. It's gorgeous.
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger here, and winemaker Greg Graziano. Our our Southern California web guy for my company, who listens every Wednesday, and he said, Dan, I think of the tyranny of the French varietals and wonder why Barbera couldn't be as popular here.
I think Greg and I were just talking off the air about why, and so I guess he was sort of reading my mind. I think, Christopher, I guess you're talking.
Yeah.
He and I probably love this variety more than 99% of Americans, but the reason that part of America doesn't like it is that it gets too ripe in when it's grown here, because we get so much sun in our vineyards that this stuff has a tendency to seduce winemakers into thinking that they can leave it on the vine for an extra 3 or 4 days.
But they shouldn't.
You can't. Just get it up. Watch that pH. Watch that acidity. Get it off the vine and make a wine from it that has fruit, not overripe fruit.
Well, that's one of the things that Dan and I were talking about. Is a lot of people, you know, and a lot of these people are my friends, and they make Italian grape varieties, and maybe they shouldn't, but they don't taste anything like Italian grape varieties, because you have to drink a lot of Italian wine to really understand, you know, what you're doing. And a lot of people say, well, you know, I only drink Italian wine because that's where it should be grown. And, you know, no, that's not true. But the reality is if you're going to grow Italian grape varieties, it should taste and smell like the varieties that come from Italy. To me, I'm old traditional guy, right?
Well, how does that work with Barbera here in Sonoma County?
Well, again, I mean, Dan said it. You don't want to make it overripe and too inky and too low in acid and too high in pH. Otherwise, it's just going to seem like every other California wine that you've had, right?
If winemakers are concerned about color, they've already put something ahead of flavor that shouldn't be there. Color is not an issue for wine. If you're worried about color, rethink your strategy.
Well, but you know, but a lot of people are, unfortunately, they are too concerned with color. And, you know, that's one of the problems why Napa Valley Cabernet doesn't age anymore. It's, you know, they pick it at 28 sugar, and it's 15.5 alcohol, it's 4 pH, and it's 4 acid. That wine will never age, you know, and Dan and I will tell you both, we're drinking, you know, Napa Valley Cabernets from the 70s and the 80s that are still tasting wonderful. I've had early 2000 Napa Valley Cabernets that are dead. Forget it. You know,
really?
It's over. It's over.
I'm not putting any wines away, not because of my age. I'm very optimistic about my age. But
right, but see, again, I think it's a respect for what you like. And, you know, I think Dan and I are fortunate because we've been doing this for so long. We appreciate those older wines that are made by great winemakers in the Napa Valley, wherever, that had respect for the grapes, that were properly ripe, had proper acidity and proper pHs, so they would age.
And this, you know? Barbera, your reference point is clearly Italy.
Right,
that's,
exactly.
That's exactly what this wine reminds me of. It gives you the character of the soil of Nebbiolo.
Which it kind of reminds me of the next wine we're going to have here, which is our Graziano 2016 Carignan. So,
oh, okay, well, the hell with my stomach, I got to taste.
Okay.
This is pure example of Carignan. Carignan never got any respect because it was always the workhorse. It was the blending variety. But when you make it into a single varietal wine, it has this wonderful personality.
Yeah, and we've talked about this and tasted stuff, some Carignan before.
We've tasted great Carignan.
Yeah.
Well, this is from our Vincenzo vineyard. I named it after my grandfather. I purchased this vineyard. It's a 15-acre vineyard from my family that was, in my family for over 100 years. I purchased this from my cousins about 6 years ago. So this is the second vintage since I've owned the property. And this is, again, aged in barrels for over almost 3 years. It's, I can't remember because we make so many wines if it's 100% Carignan. We sometimes will put maybe a little Zin or something. But it's mainly Carignan, and you know,
this is great, man.
It's a delicious wine.
But this is old world kind of stuff. I mean, again,
well,
anybody looking for that, I mean, it's not shy in alcohol. It's like 14.5.
Yeah, but the aftertaste, it keeps going on and on and on. And, yeah. and for a variety that is sort of a non-entity in certain respects, this is a beautiful example of how the variety delivers.
Mm, and great acidity.
Oh, would this work great with a steak?
Oh,
a good steak?
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of red meat, I don't care. I mean,
lamb?
Lamb. Even chicken to
because it's a
degree.
Little earthy. It's got some earthiness to it. But again, one of the things I love about this variety, and you know, it's in our Primo Rosso, which Dan likes so much, is this is a variety that loves to have things go into it, but it's also a variety that loves to go in anything else because it's not a super overt fruity kind of variety, but it gives wines tannins, it gives wines acidity. And you can blend it in another variety, and it doesn't overtake the character of that variety, which makes it such a great blending.
Yeah.
But it also, if you want to put a little Zinfandel in this, or a little bit of Dolcetto, or a little bit of Petit Sirah, it welcomes that as long as you don't overdo it.
Yeah, if you don't overdo it, it'll tweak it up
right,
nicely.
Exactly.
But,
exactly.
Greg Graziano from Graziano Family of Wines, Mendocino Wine Growers since 1918, is back with us. You just handed out the, what do you call this? It's a...
What's a newsletter? We produce
newsletter.
It every quarter.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. My daughter and myself are the main contributors of it these days. And we have a tasting room manager, John Ray, who's from Santa Rosa. And he works on it occasionally as well. So, no, this is an important thing for us because it really, I've always thought that if you really want to know a winery, you must really understand what they're all about. And this this is the kind of thing that we can tell everybody, hey, this is what we do.
And this is
how
many
we
pages,
do it.
So it's got everything. Let me read this. The 2011 Monte Volpe Dolce Alexandra. Late harvest. Now, I can't read. I think I did okay with the previous, but... Tokai Friulano.
Friulano, you did perfect, right? Tokai Friulano is a relative of Sauvignon Blanc from Bordeaux, but it got into Slovenia, where they call it Sauvignon Ass, and it's a wonderful variety. It's a tough variety to grow because it likes to rot like Sauvignon, and that's why we made this beautiful late harvest wine from it, right? So, yeah, it's a real special wine, and we're, you know, we gave it away as a Christmas present this year to our wine club members, and, I made a ton of it because...
This is a 2011.
Yeah, that vintage was the most... Well, we picked these grapes at 65 bricks.
60?
Probably the sweetest wine in the world you'll ever have. It's
so there was
40%
no juice at all.
Sugar.
It was just right. a slurry.
Right, right. And and it was and this that particular wine you're talking about is 40 bricks, 40% sugar. It's probably
which
the sweetest
is a hell
wine
of a lot.
Which is a hell of a lot.
Yeah, it broke
your ebulliometer.
Yes, it did. I think we had to dilute it like two or three times before it would even work in the ebulliometer. You know, it was.
What's a blumometer?
It's a thing that checks sugar and
tells you the specific gravity of the liquid if it is liquid.
Well, Blue Monitor, one of my favorite bands, playing this Saturday at Hop Mug.
There you go.
It's an old inside joke. Right. I can't stop talking about it.
It's a real sweet wine, but anyway, so we've just got a few cases left, and you know, we usually make these late harvest wines about every 5 years. But with global warming, this is 2011 was really the last vintage that we've had any botrytis. And Potter Valley is like the king of botrytis. You know, there was.
But also, 11 was a cool year, and you had plenty of acidity to go with it.
Right, right.
It's GrazianoFamilyOfWines.com. Check them out. And if you get up into Hopland, you can stop and do a wine tasting outside. They're in Mendo. And are you guys in the orange, or are you still in the purple, or what is what's going
on? Well, whatever. I mean, we're still open. The restaurants can still do stuff outside, and we can still taste wine out. Well, I guess that's purple. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're doing better than Sonoma County.
Right. Well, we have less people. I mean, it's kind of you know, how it kind of works, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Dan?
Safe County, and a lot of fun. Greg's tasting room is really fun. I mean, that's the secret to this whole thing, because not only does he not charge for the tasting, but the people who show up are really a lot. Most of them are really regulars. And you get a lot of regulars in there, and it's like an old home week.
Well, do you, I don't know if you guys know a local Santa Rosa guy, Frank Tucci.
Don't know the
Tucci's name. He started the viticult or the wine business program at Sonoma State.
Oh.
And he's a regular. You know, Frank comes up all the time. He's a big supporter of ours and a friend. And, yeah, he's a good guy. So. And he knows wine. He's got a, unfortunately, he had a huge cellar, lost his cellar in the fire last year, you know. So thank God he's trying to rebuild it with our wines, because he knows they'll age really well.
Good.
And Graziano wines don't burn.
Well, no.
All right, I'm just.
Okay, so we have the last wine. Then this is the Montevolpe Primo Rosso. And Primo Rosso is like first red, right? This is our least expensive wine, and now it's under a screw cap in our 2015 vintage. And people like, this is like your current release? Well, this was in barrels for 4 years, right?
Wow. A four-year barrel-aged red wine for $15. Ridiculous. I mean, it's impossible to make a wine like this economically.
It's one of the things you can do when you have like 3,000 barrels, right, full of wine.
Ooh, this is fabulous.
So this is basically, this wine was born because we started to make all these Italian varieties, you know, Sangiovese, Barbera, Dolcetto, Nebbiolo, Negramaro, Prima, whatever. You keep going on and on. And they weren't selling like we wanted, right? They were just, people were going, oh, man, what is that? And so I came to the realization that I had to find a way to move this stuff, to get it sold. So I said, well, let's make an inexpensive, wonderful red table wine, and we'll sell it cheap just to move it. And it's our biggest selling red wine right now. And unfortunately, again, I don't make a lot of money off this thing, but we do move a lot of wine.
This is a really exciting wine because it's already got some maturity from the bottle, but it's still a baby because it's some time. Because by putting it in a screw cap, you've extended its life.
I think so, and we just want to make it easy for people. I mean, although, again, we think this is a serious wine, sometimes people get it, they get a little bit, you know, they see the vintage and they go, oh, my God, it's 15, it's probably no good. Probably over the hill, or, you know, who knows, whatever.
If anything, it was released too soon, but that's another story.
That's another story, isn't it? So we wanted to liven it up a bit by making it more friendly, and we thought the screw cap would do that. Because, again, this is the kind of wine that should be on every Italian wine list by the glass, right? And they can just open it up and pour it, and, yeah, let's make it easy and fun, right?
Yeah. You don't... The waiter or waitress doesn't have to say, "Hey, you want to smell the screw off?"
No. So this is Zin and Carignan. It's Dolcetto. It's Barbera. It's, you know, who knows what's in this stuff. It's just whatever's laying around that we got in barrels, right?
Premier grapes, premier treatment, oak aged, barrel matured, and then bottle aged. On top of all that, for $15, ridiculous.
What's interesting, too, is that, again, this is one of the winemaking secrets that we have, of course, is that, you know, we have all these barrels, like 3,000 barrels, and there's American wood, and there's French wood, and Hungarian wood, and so you can take an older American barrel with, like, 8 years of having wine in it. If you leave it in that barrel long enough, like this wine is 3 or 4 or 5 years old, it will actually extract some beautiful wood from that particular barrel. And American wood is actually, in my opinion, better in the third or fourth or fifth or sixth, whatever year, than it is in the first couple years.
Wow.
So you're still getting a little bit of oak impression on this wine. Do you think so, Dan?
Is a little teeny it's bit subtle. Of oak character. Yeah.
Right. And that's all old barrels. It's not new barrels.
It's great to see winemaker Greg Graziano back with us here. Graziano, familyofwines.com. Greg, always a pleasure, man. You keep in mind, in Hopland, they're open for outside tastings and such.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure
It is.
To sit around drink wine with you guys and talk about what we do.